Welcome to VOA Asia Weekend. Over the next 60 minutes, you'll hear some of the top stories and features of the past week from our daily VOA Asia program. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. President Donald Trump had messages for U.S. political and economic adversaries Tuesday. Speaking at the United Nations General Assembly annual debate, Trump said that while the United States does not seek conflict with any other nation, he will not hesitate to defend America's interests. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
President Donald Trump said the United States desires peace, cooperation, and mutual gain with all countries, but he would always defend America's interests.
The United States, after having spent over $2.5 trillion since my election to completely rebuild our great military, is also by far the world's most powerful nation. Hopefully, it will never have to use this power.
Trump singled out the regime in Iran as one of the greatest global threats, saying it oppresses its citizens at home while fueling conflicts and terrorism beyond its borders. But he left the door open to diplomacy, noting that some of America's past enemies are now its closest friends. Still hope for an encounter between the U.S. and Iranian presidents on the sidelines of the U.N. meetings has all but evaporated after the September 14th attacks on two Saudi oil installations. The U.S. has blamed Iran, but Iran denies involvement. With the 2020 presidential election campaign in full swing, Trump addressed two issues very dear to his voting base: trade with China and the flow of migrants from Central America into the southern United States.
The American people are absolutely committed to restoring balance to our relationship with China. Hopefully, we can reach an agreement that will be beneficial for both countries. But as I have made very clear, I will not accept a bad deal for the American people.
And he had a direct message for undocumented migrants.
To anyone conducting crossings of our border illegally, please hear these words. Do not pay the smugglers. Do not pay the coyotes. Do not put yourself in danger. Do not put your children in danger. Because if you make it here, you will not be allowed in. You will be promptly returned home.
President Trump said every country has the absolute right to protect its borders, including the United States. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
A corporate collapse waiting to happen. That is the grim assessment of a new coal mine in Australia that has become a battleground for conservationists and the centre-right government over climate change. The Indian mining giant Adani plans to export coal from its Carmichael mine in Queensland to Asia. But a forensic accounting expert believes the project is in fragile financial state. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Stop mining coal,
Years of protest have failed to stop Australia's most controversial coal mine. It was approved by the Queensland state government in June. Owned by the Indian energy giant Adani, the project in Queensland's Galilee Basin has been a flashpoint for pro and anti-coal campaigners. Professor Sandra van der Laan is a forensic accounting specialist at the University of Sydney. She told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that the project isn't viable.
Adani Mining is in a very fragile, even perilous financial position with significant amounts of debt. It looks to me like a corporate collapse waiting to happen.
Adani's Australian arm has said the comments about its financial position were false and misleading. It said its accounts are annually audited and tested for matters such as insolvency. It added that the project won't make money until the mine is built and its coal exported. Adani Australia Chief Executive Lucas Dow says the facility's environmental impact has also been assessed by various government agencies.
Obviously, this has been a rigorous process that's transpired over the last couple of years. It's obviously been subject to rigorous scientific evaluation, including the CSIRO and Geoscience Australia. We're now looking forward to getting going. This is obviously also a great day for not only our project, but more broadly for regional Queensland, and in particular, North and Central Queensland. So we're now focused on getting on with the job.
No other recent mining venture here in Australia has been so divisive. The Adani mine has stirred passions on both sides of the argument.
Without coal, this country would start to fall into economic basket case sort of category.
It's just going to do way too much damage to the environment, and the things I've been reading suggest that it isn't going to create anywhere near as many jobs as we're being told. So it doesn't seem like a win at all, particularly when everyone's saying that coal is a dying energy source.
But Australia remains heavily reliant on cheap and plentiful supplies of coal. It earns billions of dollars in export revenue and helps to generate the lion's share of the nation's electricity. The coal from the new Adani mine will probably head to power stations in India. Initially, about 10 million tonnes a year will be extracted. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia Weekend. There's much more right after this.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This is VOA Asia Weekend. As Afghanistan's presidential election on September 28th approaches, one of the largest cities in the country, a one-time capital of the Taliban regime, shows little interest in the contest, the fourth since 2004. As VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Kandahar, apathy and a lack of faith in the process are among the reasons for the disinterest.
A lazy sunset in Kandahar reflects the mood. Residents of the city, one of the largest in Afghanistan, seem uninterested in the upcoming presidential election. With more than a dozen candidates in the running, posters, banners, or other visible signs of electioneering are scarce.
The VOA team has driven through most of the city, and out of 17 candidates running for president, this was the only billboard we could find.
Some of the apathy could be traced back to the now failed peace talks between the US and Taliban. Earlier this month, President Donald Trump canceled the talks, blaming the Taliban for continuing violence that killed an American soldier.
People were optimistic about the peace process. Now that it is postponed and we have elections, but people are worried that even if they choose a new president, the war will continue.
Others say they have lost trust in a process that they say seems to always produce results that America wants.
In the last presidential elections, we knew that our vote was not respected. Our leaders are not independent.
Political activists say years of bad governance also creates voter distrust in the entire process.
In general, there are less billboards and rallies. We can say almost zero election activity in Kandahar. People are tired of lies and broken promises.
This atmosphere of general distrust in the process and complaints of bad governance, activists say, may lead to a low voter turnout on election day. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Kandahar.
U.S. lawmakers at a recent congressional hearing pushed for answers on stalled peace talks with the Taliban following President Donald Trump's suspension of the negotiations earlier this month. The open hearing followed a closed-door session in which the top U.S. envoy to Afghanistan complied with a congressional demand by lawmakers for more information on the negotiations. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more on the questions being raised about the future of the U.S. role in Afghanistan.
Fresh wave of Taliban attacks, just days after President Trump declared U.S. negotiations dead. After 18 years of war, both sides now at a standstill.
What other alternative do we have when they occupy and own 50% of Afghanistan.
The Taliban are focused on securing the removal of U.S. and international forces from Afghanistan. They understand from 9 rounds of negotiations that that can only come about if they are committed to working to ensure that Afghanistan cannot be a platform for international terrorism.
U.S. envoy Khalil Azad led those negotiations that could have concluded with Trump meeting the Taliban at the presidential retreat in Camp David, a step that infuriated lawmakers from both parties.
I hope that never happens again. No terrorist should be allowed on the United States unless they're in chains, and especially a terrorist that attacked the U.S. on 9/11.
The president himself has spoken openly about his thought process on the Camp David invitation. I would just underscore, you know, it again shows that this is an administration that's willing to take risks to try to promote peace.
Washington is making another unexpected move. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announcing a $160 million cut in aid to Afghanistan, accusing the Afghan government of being an unreliable partner.
We wanted to be able to signal through the embassy posture and the aid restructuring that we are committed to the long-term development of Afghanistan, but not overcommitted to the point that we're assuming an unreasonable or even a counterproductive level of nation building.
Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai has called on the U.S. to resume peace talks, and U.S. lawmakers acknowledge the time for a military solution has ended.
Here's the reality after 18 years of war. The Taliban still exists. We need, unfortunately, to deal with that fact. And the adage remains true, you don't make peace with your friends. And believe it or not, there's some common ground. For starters, the Taliban wants our troops out of Afghanistan, and we want our troops home.
A key test of the Taliban's commitment to the process, shunning violence in the Afghan presidential election set for September 28th. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Coming up, e-tags for Asian commerce. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts. And keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
We continue now with VOA Asia Weekend. Palm oil problems and a new electronic tagging system are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
The Malaysian Palm Oil Board is undergoing an initiative to breed small dwarf trees in response to problems in the palm oil industry. Prices for palm oil have fallen recently because of sluggish demand from some importers, and the industry's image has been damaged by environmental groups who say the rapid expansion of plantations has damaged the jungles as well as tribespeople's lands. The Malaysian government hopes the dwarf tree program will cut costs and limit environmental damage. The trees are 30% smaller and produce twice the amount of palm oil per hectare as the current trees do. But many challenges remain. The dwarf trees went on sale in 2017 and were slow to sell. At about $7 each, the seedlings are around twice the price of conventional varieties, and many small farmers cannot afford them. The European Parliament also recently banned the use of palm oil in biofuels, classifying them as unsustainable. Despite the many environmental and economic challenges, the breeding program continues, and dwarf palm oil trees have been planted in several areas in Malaysia. Convenience stores in Japan have started to use electronic tags to manage their food supply. Until now, employees have had to check the shelf life of their products 3 to 4 times a day, usually requiring staff to check products one by one. The electronic tags enable store employees to see the stock size and the trading volume via wireless scanning, making it more convenient for the store to adjust the purchase quantity and thereby reduce the waste of goods. The electronic tag system sharply reduces the number of workers needed at cash registers and for inventory management.
It shortens the employees' amount of time spent doing register work in the store on a daily basis and helps the shop assistants work more efficiently.
Electronic tagging has not been mainstreamed yet because of its high price. But stores are hoping that with the development of the technology and mass production, these costs will be reduced. According to the Consumer Affairs Agency of Japan, the country throws away nearly 28 million tons of food waste every year, nearly 30% of which is thrown away near its expiration date. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
There's more VOA Asia Weekend coming up.
For listeners in China, there's a new Chinese language iPhone application from VOA. Simply go to the iTunes App Store and type VOA space Chinese, and then look for VOA News Chinese Edition. With this application, you can get the latest news and radio and TV programs in Chinese. It also lets you transfer photos and video directly to Washington. Go to the iTunes App Store and type VOA space Chinese to get your free Chinese language iPhone app from VOA.
With many of the top stories from the past week, we continue with VOA Asia Weekend. Smartphones have quickly evolved from being a way to make an untethered phone to serve as a portable handheld personal computer. This mostly positive evolution has created conditions like internet addiction disorder. And to help people overcome a disorder like this and others, special rehab centers are opening around the world. Iri Mamon visited one such center in Seattle.
As smartphones get smarter, people put them down less and less, and that can be a problem. A 2014 University of Hong Kong study estimated about 6% of the world's population, over 400 million people, are actually addicted to their devices. But there are places helping people who just can't unplug, like this one on a secluded farm outside Seattle. This is a detox farm for people addicted to their iPhones, gaming, and the internet. Patients are fully disconnected from the outside world for a month, no internet and no cell phones. 19-year-old Thomas has been here for almost a month. His issue is gaming.
I play a lot of shooters, but I also actually played for my college's, one of my college's esports teams, so.
When he started feeling depressed, his parents took him to this program called Restart. It's not cheap and costs over $500 a day, but for many, it's worth it.
I used to make video games.
Life here is strict, bedtimes are enforced, and patients have jobs on the farm. They work out, clean, and cook. Then patients come to Seattle, where they relearn how to live a balanced life and regain lost communication skills.
A lot of people go online because they have friends there, and they feel like they get their social needs met online, in those online communities.
Restart has 10 themed rooms where patients can tune out, lounge, paint, or play with Legos. Mobile internet use is strictly forbidden. Patients can use phones only to make calls and text. There are laptops in the center, but their use is limited to 2 hours a day. 2 years ago, Alex spent at least 10 hours a day in front of his computer.
Video games are the devil. They're absolutely the devil. Don't play them. More of a joke for me, but regulation. Taking a look at how much tech use you have in your life.
Alex finished the 2-year-long rehabilitation course. Since then, he hasn't played any video games and only uses his cell phone when absolutely necessary. Restart was founded in 2009 and has helped over 400 people overcome internet addiction. Yet Chief Clinical Director Hilary Cash says the problem is growing.
Technology, by design, is actually very addictive. The people who build the apps and make the video games are quite purposeful.
But no matter how compelling the internet can be, places like Restart are teaching the value of being a part of the real world. For Yuri Mamon in Seattle, Washington, NRI's VOA News.
One person's trash is another person's treasure, is Clark Bedford's philosophy. The former museum conservator spent his first career overseeing art, but then decided to make his own. Maxim Moskalkov traveled to Hyattsville to meet with the artist.
Oh my gosh, they're beautiful! He wasn't sure what he said. Yeah. I'm going to pull up and look at the other one too. I might get out and take pictures, is that okay?
Artist Clark Bedford is used to passers-by stopping to stare. His day is full of tourists and locals who stop by his house in Hyattsville, Maryland, to admire his unusual art. Today, the mayor of a nearby city, Mount Rainier, stopped by to personally thank the artist for his work and the inspiration.
This is amazing! And somebody just takes time and put all this together like this.
That man right there.
Him?
Yeah.
Are you the artist? Oh, the old woman is impressed.
Clark Bedford used to work as a conservator at the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. And though he is now retired, he never gave up art. Only now he's creating it himself, literally from scraps. Bedford looks for his materials at scrap yards and junk heaps, antique stores and consignment shops.
Find something you like. And it's usually because of the shapes and the age. And eventually that thing will be something. It's like the object tells you what to do with it.
Bedford got interested in creating art installations from scraps after he retired. Today it's hard to believe his yard used to be empty.
There's a fire hydrant out front, and it's just a white fence and a fire hydrant. It was inside, started coming outside, and then I started making things for outside.
Even Bedford himself doesn't know how many art installations he has created in the last 12 years. But one thing is for certain, his art can't be contained solely within the house and yard. A special part of Bedford's collection is dedicated to four cars and two buses that are parked nearby.
Cars can't go into the back. There's no access. So they're on the street, which means they all are legal. They all can be driven.
Maxim Moskalkov, VOA News, Hyattsville, Maryland.
I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Stay with us. There's more VOA Asia Weekend coming up.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
We're back with more VOA Asia Weekend. U.S. President Donald Trump has long opposed globalism and criticized the multilateralism that is the foundation of the United Nations. However, as the leader of the country that hosts the world body, Trump is obligated to attend and speak to the U.N.'s General Assembly every year, which he will do for a third time Tuesday. A senior administration official says the U.S. president is to affirm America's leadership and, quote, underscore that America is a positive alternative to authoritarianism. Trump this week is also holding one-on-one meetings with some of the visiting heads of government, as well as attending at least one diplomatic reception and a lunch hosted by U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres. In his first formal remarks of the week Monday, Trump spoke at an event he and Vice President Mike Pence hosted, the Global Call to Protect Religious Freedom at the United Nations. Trump said protecting religious freedom is one of his administration's highest priorities. Also Monday, Trump sat down with Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan, a day after the U.S. president attended a huge rally for the Indian American community alongside Indian Prime Minister Modi in a Houston, Texas stadium. The U.S. president reiterated his offer to try to settle the long-standing Kashmir territorial dispute between the two neighbors.
It will be dependent on both of these gentlemen. One without the other doesn't work if you're going to do mediation or if you're going to do an arbitration. But certainly I would be willing to help if both Pakistan, let's say, and India wanted me to do that. I am ready, willing, and able. It's a complex issue. It's been going on for a long time. But if both wanted it, I would be ready to do it.
Trump added he hopes the two countries will come together and do something that's, quote, really smart. In the meeting with Khan, Trump lavished praise on India's rival and said Pakistan could be ready to help with Taliban negotiations.
We've hit the Taliban harder than we've ever hit them in all of the years. I guess we've been there now 19 years. How ridiculous is that? And when they killed 12 people, one of them an American soldier, as you know, and one a United Nations soldier, for the sake of going into the meeting with a little strength, they thought they went in with weakness, and I canceled everything. We have hit them harder in the last 2 weeks than we've ever hit them before.
When do you think the talks could resume again, sir?
We'll see what happens, but I will say that the Prime Minister has been very helpful, and he wants to do something. He wants to see something happen, so that's fine.
The most closely watched event on the UN's Monday calendar was the Climate Action Summit, where Trump made a brief unscheduled appearance. The president, who spent less than 15 minutes at the event, did not speak. Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg scolded world leaders, saying people are suffering and dying from the effects of global warming, and all the leaders have offered are empty words. VOA correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
16-year-old Greta Thunberg spoke emotionally about a crisis created by adults, but whose consequences will be borne by her generation.
You are failing us. But the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you.
Thunberg warned the more than 60 presidents and prime ministers gathered in the UN General Assembly Hall that the youth would not let them get away with this, and that change is coming whether they like it or not. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres backed her up.
My generation has failed in its responsibility to protect our planet. That must change.
Guterres has called for the phasing out of fossil fuels and an end to the construction of new coal power plants. Numerous leaders, including some of the world's biggest polluters, came with pledges to cut their carbon emissions and transition away from dirty energy, including coal. U.S. President Donald Trump, who declared his intention to withdraw the United States from the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement 6 months after he took office, was not expected to attend the summit. He did, however, turn up in the audience for about 15 minutes to listen to other leaders' speeches. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is VOA Asia Weekend. As we have mentioned, U.S. President Donald Trump joined India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi in the Howdy Modi event organized by the Indian American community in Houston, Texas. The president praised bilateral relations with the world's second most populous nation, but also seemed to use the occasion to woo Texas voters ahead of the 2020 election. VOA Slotika Hoke reports an estimated 50,000 people attended that rally addressed by the two leaders.
Trump and Modi were greeted by cheering crowds in Houston's NRG Stadium on Sunday at a rally dubbed Howdy Modi, while protesters rallied outside. Modi won a landslide victory in this year's election, but critics say that human rights abuses and ethnic violence under his leadership have pushed India on a genocide watch list. Modi introduced Trump to the Indian American community in Houston as the great American president and India's close friend.
Mr. President, this morning in Houston, you can hear the heartbeat of this great partnership.
Modi invited Trump and his family to visit India, adding that for America and Americans, there is opportunity to progress in India. A beaming Trump praised Modi's leadership.
In a single decade, with the help of Prime Minister Modi's pro-growth reforms, India has lifted nearly 300 million people out of poverty.
The United States and India traded more than $140 billion in goods and services last year. The highlight of Modi's U.S. visit was his address to some of 500,000 Indian Americans living in Houston, the city that has a $7 billion worth of annual trade with India. Trump praised Indian Americans across the United States as hard workers. In what sounded like a 2020 campaign speech, the president promised 70,000 new manufacturing jobs for Texans and touted the success of the U.S. economy across the nation.
Here in the United States, there has never been a better time to hire, invest, grow, and pursue your dreams. Indian companies employ tens of thousands of Americans across a range of industries, including American steel. In 2018, India's JSW Steel announced that it would invest up to $500 million to revitalize a shuttered steel plant in the great state of Ohio.
Trump won Texas in the 2016 election, but the latest polls show he could face a tough challenge from Democratic candidates in 2020. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
Stay with us. There's more VOA Asia Weekend coming up.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
We continue now with VOA Asia Weekend. Modern technology is becoming more and more common in artificial limbs. But advanced treatment like that is still a distant dream for a majority of the amputees in Pakistan. VOA Simon Khan has more.
The Pakistan Society for the Rehabilitation of the Disabled has a storied history dating back to the 1960s, including treating patients who need artificial limbs.
We used to only use steel and leather to make limbs, but now we use polypropylene sheets and Velcro. Using leather also used to take a long time.
But Pakistan is primarily relying on wooden limbs, despite having a higher incidence of lower limb amputations than most other parts of the world.
First, I cover my leg with socks. Then I put a rubber thing on and then place the wooden limb. So it is completely covered and has no air access. It's easy to walk in, but when I take everything off, I feel like my leg has been in water for a long time. Very soft.
Two young entrepreneurs in Pakistan have answered the call for advancements and started to produce prosthetic limbs and feet using carbon fiber and a mixture of Kevlar with titanium and stainless steel components. However, their product costs more, and the business side of keeping the doors open becomes challenging in a poor country like Pakistan.
In the beginning, you will immediately face the problem of capital. No one is ready to invest in such a business because the return in this business is after 5 to 10 years as compared to other businesses.
Experts say if Pakistan receives funding from the government and starts producing artificial limbs on larger scales, more and more disabled people can benefit from new technology at affordable prices. A non-government organization called HOPE is helping in the cause by offering donated prosthetics from countries such as Germany. However, the supply of donated prosthetics is nowhere close to the number of people applying for treatment. The director of HOPE, Dr. Khalid Khan Niazi, says private companies can also help his organization help more people.
If companies invest in expensive equipment to start building the parts here, then prices can get as low as one-third of what they are now.
Giving hope to doctors and disability advocates here in Pakistan and around the world that more patients can be helped. For Saman Khan in Lahore, Pakistan, Bijan Hamdar, VOA News.
Coming up, pressure on Pompeo.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
With many of the top stories from the past week, we continue with VOA Asia Weekend. We've mentioned Secretary of State Mike Pompeo often on VOA Asia, as he has dealt with many issues throughout the region, including denuclearization talks with North Korea. Pompeo is now facing his first major crisis on how to respond to the attacks on Saudi oil facilities, which he blamed on Iran. In response to the attacks, President Donald Trump has approved the deployment of U.S. troops, defensive in nature, and military equipment to Saudi Arabia. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain looks at Pompeo's close relationship with the president and his leadership skills on display at this critical moment.
The attacks on Saudi Arabia's largest oil facilities have put a spotlight on the Trump administration's response amid spiraling tensions with Iran. All eyes turn to the top U.S. diplomat Mike Pompeo, dispatched by the president to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, after he went further than any other official in quickly pinning the blame on Iran and calling the attacks an act of war. Foreign policy expert Karen Young says U.S. credibility in the world is at stake.
Secretary Pompeo is going to have to assure those partners that America is indeed supporting them. And sometimes the White House and the president himself make statements that puts that into question. I mean, longstanding policy from the end of World War II to the Carter administration and to the present.
President Donald Trump has offered mixed signals about how the United States might respond, saying there are many options and noting it was Saudi Arabia, not the U.S., that was attacked. Trump chose Pompeo's hostage affairs special envoy, Robert O'Brien, to replace John Bolton as National Security Advisor, after saying the Secretary of State is fantastic and consulting him about possibly taking on both high-profile jobs.
I get along with him so well. We have a lot of the same views and a couple of little different views, but he likes the idea of having somebody in there with him, and I do too.
Experts agree that Pompeo has been careful not to disagree with the president in public, and say that may be one reason why he is the longest surviving member of Trump's national security team.
At the end of the day, I think Secretary Pompeo has the trust of the President of the United States.
Others point out that Pompeo was not CIA director for long before the president moved him over to replace Rex Tillerson at the State Department.
It's also important to note that he wasn't the CIA director for very long. It was about a year. His real experience was, you know, being in the Congress and, you know, being in a kind of somewhat defense industry in Kansas when he was a business owner. And he's not a man of international affairs in the way that we've had secretaries of state of the past. He's no James Baker.
For now, Trump and Pompeo appear to be in sync as they tackle foreign policy challenges around the world. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Now in VOA Asia, the city of Huntington Park in the state of California has hired a patrol monitor that is on duty 24 hours a day. Christiana Shevchenko met with this super cop and watched him work. Anna Rice narrates her story.
A new officer with the Huntington Park Police patrols local parks 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He doesn't need rest, coffee breaks, a salary, or medical insurance. And that is because it is a robocop. The chief of the Huntington Park Police says the main function of the robocop is to scan and film the surroundings.
Cameras with night vision that record 360 degrees. It also has a distress button, which is located here. So if somebody were to need assistance or they want to contact our communication center, they can do it by way of that distress button. And there's people that are monitoring on the other end.
The RoboCop works 24 hours a day and is self-charging. It's easy to program the newest police employee and make changes to the software if necessary. The RoboCop's maintenance costs are roughly $75,000 a year.
It travels the entire park. It is a programmed path, but we're able to change the path and adapt it to maybe different activities that we become aware of. So there's a person coming, and if it senses it too close, it'll stop for a moment.
The RoboCop also records the license plates of passing cars and checks them against an online database of stolen cars. It can also help locate a lost iPhone because it is able to determine a smartphone's MAC address.
Something wrong happens, like the police can see it from the robot, and then the police can come and like figure out what's happening to us.
The RoboCop can't replace its human handlers. The whole goal is to give police more time to do things machines can't do.
We decided it might be something that could work for the park, since we've been having some concerns about safety. This park is the largest park in the city, and so we wanted an extra set of eyes that would help the police department in order to patrol it 24/7.
RoboCop's creators believe this model, known as K5, is best used for providing security at public places like hospitals, parking lots, parks, and airports. So far, it seems to be working out just fine. For Kristina Shevchenko in Los Angeles, California, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Medieval drama Game of Thrones closed its run with a fourth Emmy Award for Best Drama Series, while Fleabag was the upset winner for Best Comedy Series. Reuters' Eve Johnson has the story from Los Angeles.
Game of Thrones.
HBO's medieval fantasy series stormed the Emmy Awards Sunday night, taking home 12 trophies, including the top prize, Best Drama. The night marks a final bow for Game of Thrones as it closes its run on HBO. Peter Dinklage took the only acting trophy of the bunch for his supporting role as Tyrion Lannister.
No other place could I be standing on a stage like this.
You know when you've done everything?
But the breakout star of the night was Amazon Studios' Fleabag, scooping up the prize for Best Comedy. Its creator and star, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, grabbed a trophy each for Best Comedy Writing and Actress.
It's just really wonderful that to know and reassuring that a dirty, pervy, angry, messed up woman can make it to the Emmys. So thank you so much. Thank
you. And in an Emmy's first, an openly gay black man won Best Drama Actor. Broadway veteran Billy Porter won the prize for his starring role in LGBTQ series Pose.
Oh my God, God bless you all. The category is love, y'all, love!
Wow, you look amazing. Can I
the night paid tribute to some newcomers
Instagram?
As well. Jodie Comer won a trophy for Best Actress, playing a psychotic assassin in Killing Eve. And Jarrell Jerome won Best Actor for his role in When They See Us. The Netflix drama is based on the story of the Central Park Five, wrongly accused of rape.
This is for the men that we know as the Exonerated Five. It's for Raymond, Yusuf, Antron, Kevin, and King Corey Wise!
What have they done?
HBO's limited series Chernobyl, based on a Soviet nuclear accident, also made a strong showing, taking home 10 trophies. In the final count, HBO won the night, edging out Netflix with 34 Emmys and new bragging rights in the battle for viewers.
Reuters reporter Eve Johnson. In Afghanistan, where the Taliban once banned music, a young musician teaches her art to a new generation of children, including many street kids. Masuma Mohammadi worries that the Taliban might regain power, but also hopes one day her students and all Afghans will embrace music. VOA's Jim Randall has our story.
Twice a week, 17-year-old Masuma Mohammadi and her band take a group of street children to a Kabul cafe and teach them to play instruments and read music. Masuma is a high school student and leader of the pop band Kindness Ambassadors.
At this age, the kids should have been following their dreams, going to school and studying. I've seen the disappointment in their eyes and their faces, and that's why I teach them music.
12-year-old Brishana is among 15 street children Masuma has been teaching, and she hopes she can follow in her mentor's footsteps.
I'm not afraid to perform music on Kabul streets or anywhere because I love music. It's one of my dreams to become a good musician.
The band helps the children financially, giving up most of the money the group earns for private concerts.
The most enjoyable moment of the teaching is when the children follow the music notes which I'm singing.
Teaching children is just one of the band's activities since the group formed in 2018. Besides paid concerts, they stage free public performances, especially after bombings to cheer people up. It's an unusual move for a teenage girl in a deeply conservative country where the Taliban once outlawed music and Western-style popular culture is widely criticized.
They must accept this culture, and they're not allowed to ban our musical activities. We will not allow them to do so.
She hopes that one day Afghans like her can express their love for the craft. Jim Randall, VOA News.
There's more VOA Asia Weekend coming up.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
We continue now with VOA Asia Weekend. U.S. President Donald Trump has praised Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and the Indian American community in the United States. Trump appeared with Modi before a largely Indian audience of some 50,000 people who packed Houston Stadium for the Howdy Modi event. Trump told the Indian American community, "We are proud to have you as Americans. My administration is fighting for you each and every day." Modi, while introducing Trump, said he has already made the American economy strong again. He said in the 2 years that Trump has been in office, India and U.S. relations have reached new heights. Trump praised the bilateral relationship, saying India has never invested in the U.S. like it is doing today, and he wants to say it's reciprocal because we're doing the same thing in India. Trump told Modi that India has never had a better friend as president, as President Donald Trump, but despite the president's positive assertions, the U.S. and India have yet to agree on a trade deal, which has been stalled since the U.S. canceled India's special trade status. In turn, India increased tariffs on several dozen American products. One of the organizers of the Howdy Modi event said Trump is completely welcomed by the community. Recent polls, however, show lackluster support for Trump within the Indian American community, a majority of whom voted for Trump's Democratic rival Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. Modi is facing global backlash for his crackdown in disputed Kashmir. Last month, he stripped the Indian-controlled section of Kashmir of its semi-autonomous status, sparking renewed tensions with Pakistan, which also claims part of Kashmir. India has deployed thousands of troops to prevent violent protests in the Muslim-majority region, and residents in Kashmir continue to face curbs on travel and communications restrictions. President Trump later travels to Ohio, where he will make an appearance with Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. In Ohio, the president and Morrison will tour a new Australian-owned manufacturing facility for Pratt Industries. Meanwhile, President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un have already met 3 times since last June, and Trump says round 4 could soon happen. But Korea watchers are more focused on long-delayed working-level talks, as VOA's William Gallo reports from Seoul.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un may have promised to resume talks when the U.S.-South Korean military drills ended. They did end Tuesday. A day later, Steve Biegun, the top U.S. envoy for North Korea, confirmed during a visit to Seoul he hadn't heard from the North.
Regarding the restart of those negotiations, we are prepared to engage as soon as we hear from our counterparts in North Korea.
Instead, North Korean state media blasted the U.S. for holding the drills at all and hinted the North could soon return to larger provocations. The latest U.S.-South Korean exercises were computer-based, meaning there were no bombs dropped on dummy targets or overt displays of military strength. But North Korea has continued to complain about the scaled-back drills, saying it sees them as preparation to invade. William Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Continuing to overshadow other world events are the ongoing protests in Hong Kong, where protesters vandalized a subway station and defaced a Chinese flag Sunday during another weekend of pro-democracy demonstrations. Thousands also rallied inside a shopping mall in the Sha Tin area. Protesters later built a barricade across the street and set it on fire. Riot police fired tear gas to disperse some of the protesters. Meanwhile, Hong Kong has cut back rail and bus access to its airport in a move designed to avoid an anti-government protest at one of the busiest airport hubs in the world. The airport authority said in a statement warning demonstrators to stay away. There are calls online for using fake boarding passes, fake air tickets, or fake flight booking information to enter the terminal buildings. The airport authority reminds that such behavior could amount to forgery or using false instrument. On Saturday, police fired tear gas at demonstrators who vandalized a light rail station. A proposed bill that would have allowed some Hong Kong criminal suspects to be extradited to mainland China for trial sparked the months-long anti-government demonstrations. The extradition legislation has been withdrawn, but the demonstrations continue. Dissenters have since broadened their demands for the direct election of their leaders and police accountability. More than 1,300 people have been arrested since the demonstrations began in early June. You're listening to VOA Asia Weekend. There's much more right after this.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
It's the end of another week. Sit back and relax as we continue with more VOA Asia Weekend. Afghanistan has been awash in violence for decades, and hundreds of thousands of civilians have died in the fighting. A memorial designed to remember those lost and help survivors heal recently opened in Mazar-e-Sharif. VOA's Mirwas Bejan visited this exhibition and filed this report narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
A small handful of personal items are sometimes all that is left of a life. But each photograph of an Afghan war victim displayed in this exhibition is accompanied by small items that were theirs in life. Prayer rugs, prayer beads, letters, clothing items. Small things that can tell a larger story. Family members visiting the exhibition relive the day they lost their loved ones.
Back in
1978, during the Communist Party's rule, many local religious clergies and imams were picked up from the religious schools and taken to places not suitable for humans and were brutally killed.
Roughly 3,000 to 4,000 enemy fighters attacked our town at around 10 o'clock at night. Our government forces did their best to fight them, but there were too many of them. Some people were able to run away, but the ones who were captured were killed.
Jamila, who lost her brother in a clash between Taliban forces and the Afghan National Army, says her brother's family lost its leader.
My brother has 11 kids. Six of them are girls and five of them are boys. He was doing well in life, a farmer, a working man, but ended up being killed by the Taliban.
Organizers of this exhibition say civilian rights and lives should be the number one priority for the government.
We are hopeful that the current government and the next government that will be formed after elections will put justice in the forefront of the policies. It goes without saying that without justice and human rights, it is impossible for a stable and peaceful society.
According to a study called Costs of War, done by Brown University's Watson Institute, roughly 140,000 Afghan civilians were killed between 2001 and 2016 alone. This number does not include wounded civilians, nor does it include military personnel. For Mirwais Bejan in Mazar-e-Sharif, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Stay with us. There's more VOA Asia Weekend coming up.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. Online news for a changing world.
We continue with more VOA Asia Weekend. U.S. Global Broadcasting is set to have new leadership. Michael Pack, a conservative filmmaker, has been nominated to run the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which is the parent agency for Voice of America. Pak testified at a Senate confirmation hearing Thursday. VOA's Brian Patton reports that the nominee addressed concerns that President Donald Trump could impose a political bias on government news agencies like the Voice of America, which is mandated by law to be objective and balanced in its reporting and protected from interference by other U.S. government agencies.
Michael Pak told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Thursday he would ensure journalistic independence at the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which oversees VOA, if confirmed to become the organization's first CEO nominated by the Trump administration.
The whole agency rests on the belief that the reporters are independent, that no political influence is telling them how to report the news and what to say. Without that trust, I think the agency is completely undermined.
Pak is a documentary producer who headed the conservative California-based Claremont Institute and has spoken out against the perceived liberal bias in the film industry. With a $628 million yearly budget, the USAGM oversees all government-funded international news organizations that together broadcast to 100 countries and reach an estimated audience of 345 million people. They include The Voice of America, which broadcasts in over 40 languages around the world, TV and Radio Martí broadcast to Cuba, Arabic language networks Al Hora TV and Sawa Radio, as well as Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Radio Free Asia. The VOA Charter, signed into law in 1976, and the International Broadcasting Act mandate all government broadcasters adhere to strict journalistic standards that free press advocates say are essential to be a credible source of news to international audiences.
You're not a state-run media that only tells one side of the story, as often state-run media does in other countries.
Republican and Democratic lawmakers backed the agency's journalistic mission, says a former VOA director.
The members of Congress have always supported the broadcasting by VOA and the other broadcasters because they recognize the value of having one source of news that people, audiences around the world can rely on.
Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
A monumental event, you might say, has taken place here in Washington. The Washington Monument reopened to the public last week after being closed for years to replace its aging elevator and security system. First Lady Melania Trump attended the ribbon-cutting ceremony. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suarez saves us from climbing all those stairs of this massive obelisk.
This iconic landmark in the nation's capital has been closed for most of the past 8 years after a 5.8 magnitude earthquake in 2011 left 150 cracks in the stones. The Washington Monument briefly opened in 2016, but closed again after a series of elevator malfunctions.
We totally rehabbed and rebuilt the elevator system, so that's new cabling, new programming that goes with it, refurbished the motor that's part of it. And then also incorporated security screening requirements.
First Lady Melania Trump took a ceremonial first ride to the top with local students as the first public visitors.
Named after the first president of the United States, the Washington Monument is the most dramatic feature on the city's skyline and one of the most popular tourist attractions on the National Mall, averaging 500,000 visitors a year. And now tourists are very excited to be able to go back on top of the monument to see a most dramatic, spectacular view of the city.
People lined up in the early morning to get tickets. This couple from Shanghai, who do not speak English, asked for spare tickets by showing a handwritten sign that said their ancestors donated one of the commemorative stone tablets in the monument.
Well, they were very persistent. They really wanted to get up there, and I had two extra tickets.
There are 193 commemorative stone tablets set into the interior walls of the monument. According to the National Park Services, one of them was donated by the American Mission in Ningbo, China, whom the Zhangs claim as their ancestors.
We are very happy.
We are very thankful.
All the tickets are sold out and we'll fly back to China tomorrow.
Construction began in 1848 and took nearly 40 years to complete due to the Civil War and lack of funding. This time, the monument's repair was funded not only with taxpayers' money, but also with millions of dollars in private donations. Patsy Whitaker-Suarez, VOA News, Washington.
This has been VOA Asia Weekend, a compilation of some of the stories presented throughout the past week on our daily VOA Asia program. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Check out VOA Asia online at voanews.com.